Hi, this is Rick Emerson, and the following encore of Legion of News is brought to you by Squires Electric. Whether it's electrical wiring, Ethernet wiring, or wiring of any kind at all in your home or business, Squires Electric can make your life easier. Find out more at squireselectric.com or call 503-252-1609. Squires Electric.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News!
Atop the Milkpacking District in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
NATO takes over Libya's no-fly zone. State representatives work to solve our sea lion problem. And Mayor Adams is in Germany.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, hide your family! For this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon. I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, March 25th, 2011. State lawmakers are working on a plan to deal with sea lions that continue to cause problems along the Willamette River. The presence of the California sea lions has been growing for years, threatening salmon and sport fishing. At a meeting in Oregon City yesterday, lawmakers discussed a proposal that would expand non-lethal hazing operations to 7 days a week during peak fishing season.
Is this where they have to engage in some sort of forced, forced homoerotic behavior to break their will?
Yes, they make them strip down to their sea lion underpants.
And they march in a circle and do the elephant walk?
They spank them with paddles.
Okay.
Yes. Right now, hazing efforts are in effect on a limited basis. Representative David Hunt said he's working on a more long-term solution. It would allow officials to trap and remove the sea lions from the area. He said,
what are we doing now? We're just negatively impacting their self-esteem?
We're just yelling at them and telling them to shoo.
It's a sea. It's got a brain like a walnut. What do you expect it to do? We'd prefer it if you were somebody else. If you were not here right now.
Yeah. And the sea lions would go, oh, that's very nice, but there is tasty fish to be had here.
Also, I'm a sea lion, and I understand what hazing is.
Yeah, So very soon they also figure out they'll, make big loud noises at them that works for about 10 minutes, and then the sea lion goes, oh, they're not actually shooting at us or anything, they're just making noises. Okay, back to the tasty fish.
This is going to be like how they have that brilliant idea every couple of years to play Mozart in the parking lot of a 7-Eleven, because it's going to keep the young people from congregating there with their ruffianism, which doesn't really ever work, by the way.
No.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. It is Friday, March 25th, 2011. And 11, for those of you who are playing the home game, Dawn is incapable of opening a small plastic bottle of liquid.
I did it. I was capable. I
just saw you doubled over in agony and effort trying to open that just now.
Doubled over in agony. I was using my my shirt to get myself more traction or whatever.
more purchase on the lid?
Yes, exactly. I was putting my shirt around the lid and then yanking it open.
So this is less because you're a frail female, more because of your delicate lady fingers.
Right.
Which you don't wish to damage. You don't wish to scuff them or to cause yourself any sort of abrasion.
And I'm 73 years old and I'm all crippled up with arthritis.
And sweaty.
Am I sweaty?
No.
I didn't feel particularly sweaty today.
Forget I said anything. If you want to get this program later on the day, you can do so at iTunes, also as a direct MP3 download here, or at legionofnews.com, here being Cascadia.fm. You can also get it on your mobile device as well. Your mobile device is Cascadia.mobile.cascadia.fm. Mobile.cascadia.fm. Here is Don Taylor.
NATO will take over the patrol of Libyan airspace from the United States, but no member of the military alliance has yet stepped up to lead airstrikes on Colonel Gaddafi's ground forces, according to the New York Times. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton announced NATO's lead role in enforcing the no-fly zone late Thursday. Confusion remained, however, over enforcement of the no-drive zone, military code for the bombing of Gaddafi's tanks, artillery and ground forces. So now apparently we're calling bombing the crap out of stuff a no-drive, like, situation.
It's really more like a no-breathe zone, no-live zone.
One senior Obama administration official said late yesterday that NATO had indeed agreed to take over the no-drive zone. However, NATO's Secretary General said earlier that day that NATO had not yet consented to take broader responsibility for the war. Other NATO officials reported that member nations Germany and Turkey opposed NATO involvement in airstrikes that exceed the scope of UN Security Council resolution sanctioning military intervention. The White House, meanwhile, says that NATO's mission in Libya is a time-limited, scope-limited military action, which I guess is they're trying to, make a point that it's not a full-scale war. We're only going in to just kill some people, and then we're getting right back out.
What is this, a time-limited, scope-limited military action?
Yes, with partners.
This is, I believe it was our good friend George Carlin who at one point made the observation that every time the government or some sort of authority figure wishes to mask something, they take a short term and they make it much longer. So shell shock becomes post-traumatic stress disorder, and war becomes police action, becomes scope-limited, time-limited military action with partners. What do we have? Nougat? Partners.
Yes, tasty nougat.
With steak knives.
But retired Major General James Spider Marks.
Does it actually say spider? Is it in quotes?
It's in quotes. James Spider Marks says that while the coalition attack on Muammar Gaddafi's air defense systems is impressive, there seems to be a disconnect.
James Spider sounds like a garbage pail kid. He'd be like a Hollywood actor with eight legs or something.
Yeah. It's phenomenal if you look at it exclusively of great young men and women and great leaders that have put this together to achieve an end state. Now, there's a gap between what we see right now and ostensibly what the political goals look like.
Anytime they say that there's a gap happening somewhere, that just means they're about to blow something up. There's a communication gap or some sort of a freedom gap, or there's some sort of a gap between the days of tyranny and the glistening, glorious days of the 21st century. Those are all just code phrases. I mean, we're just going to go blow something into tiny little pieces. Does it say why he's James Spider?
No.
Is it Marks?
Marks.
Okay.
You can't just put that in the spider.
The story. But see, but that's
call
the thing.
Me spider.
No one does that, though. Certainly nobody at any news organization, unless they have been told to do so by some flack who perceives the press as being weak-minded and easily influenced, which they obviously are.
Well, I will punch him into Google while we finish the story and see what comes up. Marx calls this an impressive operation so far.
If you look at the application of force by this coalition, it's absolutely phenomenal. It was put together very, very quickly. Really speaks to the level of maturity, professionalism, the level of training.
Nothing speaks
desire
to the,
just kill stuff.
Nothing speaks to the level of maturity and and responsibility like calling a guy spider in a news story about war. The first half of his statement is something with which I take a little bit of issue because he says,
Look at the application of force by this coalition, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Here's the thing. We haven't actually accomplished anything. He's still there and still running the joint and presumably killing people and, crushing dissidents into some sort of a fine pink powder. So I don't really know by what yardstick. Maybe this is some new definition of the word phenomenal or a new definition of success with which I was not previously familiar.
Well, I mean,
if you look at the application of force by this coalition, it's absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, he's still there. So, no, it's really not.
Yeah. Okay. That's true.
That's like saying that your stain removing technology is really, really phenomenal if the stain is still in the rug.
I think they're just impressed with themselves for getting all of their tanks and their planes and their jeeps and their guys and their guns and their bullets.
You don't really know because you were busy looking up his nickname online, weren't you?
In the general vicinity of where things are happening.
You were busy looking up his name on the internet.
Did you find
any explanation as to why he is James Spider Marks?
No, no explanation at all. Someone must know somewhere, but I don't know what it is.
Let's just
move on.
Clarify right now that I don't care all that much.
Okay.
Here's Don Taylor.
The trouble at Japan's Fukushima. I can't even say it this morning. The trouble at Japan's.
You cover it well.
Thank you. Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant is nowhere near the point of being resolved, said Prime Minister Naoto Kan on Friday.
Kan!
Two workers were hospitalized for radiation burns yesterday after stepping in highly radioactive water that suggests a breach in the number 3 reactor vessel, according to the Los Angeles
Times. Or maybe
Times.
It's just naturally occurring pools of radioactive water that God placed there just to give, you know, the world a little extra color.
The number 3 reactor was the only reactor at the plant to use a concoction of uranium and plutonium known as MOX fuel. It's likely that a MOX fuel leak led to the unusually radioactive water, and officials say even more radiation from the fuel could be released. Meanwhile, the Japanese government has quietly extended its evacuation zone from 12 to 19 miles from the plant, suggesting that the threat is worse than officials have acknowledged.
I remember, like, a couple of days after the earthquake, they were basically just going door to door and knocking like a Fuller Brushman and going, well, you might want to keep an eye out for anything unusual, but don't worry about it. And then, like, the next day, it had been extended to a mile, and they said that that was absolutely it, that there was going to be no need to evacuate or move or warn or admonish anybody anywhere beyond the 1 mile area. And now we are up to what?
19 miles away.
That's awesome. Yeah. So I imagine that I will be packing up my things and going to the coast later on today.
Yeah, the U.S. government is recommending that citizens stay at least 50 miles away from the reactors. Apart from the dangerous radiation, daily life in the affected area has come to a standstill. There's little access to shopping or gas, and many companies have stopped making deliveries. Efforts to repair the plant continue, with 700 workers operating in shifts to vent radioactive gases and cool the damaged reactors.
If you've got personal days, take them now.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll be checking in with those 700 workers in a few months.
Sure you will.
Seeing how they're doing.
Yeah, I'm sure the government will give you access to them.
Meanwhile, they are trying to cool those fuel rods. Black smoke was seen over the plant on Wednesday, but nuclear engineer Lake Barrett isn't that concerned.
This is part of the initial accident recovery process that is going on there now. The operators are working very hard to establish better control over the reactors and the buildings that have been badly damaged around them. So these sort of burps and little things like this are going to be happening probably for days ahead.
What's his name?
Lake Barrett.
I mean, other than mouthpiece? This little...
Lake Spider Barrett.
Little burps like this.
Yeah, I like that it's like black smoke. Ah, that's just part of the cleanup process. What, they're like burning old leaves or something out back?
No, they picked a new pope, apparently.
This is not Chernobyl, he says.
It's in a different place altogether, right. And it's got a separate name and everything.
He's Lake Barrett. He knows these things. He says there's plenty of emotional talk in the media about the gravity of the nuclear accident at the Daiichi Powder Plant. But he thinks that things will get better, not worse.
It's been overstated.
First, the operators have got to improve the cooling. They have to establish electricity in the buildings. They're working very hard to...
Okay, here's what this is. Here's what's happening right here. This is like when there's some news story having to do with, you know, like, politics or something, an election or something, and they just interview some guy on television who's giving you the inside scoop about how it all came together, and you know that he's just some dick who sat on the couch watching Fox and scribbling notes, and then he just called up his agent and said, get me on TV, say that I'm an expert about this. Well, do you know anything? No, but I got all these 3x5 cards, and I think I'm going to be able to prep myself sufficient to pass myself off as though I know that of which I speak by later on today. Because it doesn't... This is exactly the sort of crap that I would say if you put me on television to explain away the acrid billows of radioactive plumage sort of just coming out of the top of the reactor. This is exactly the sort of thing that I would say just to sort of make people,
First, the operators have got to improve the cooling. They have to establish electricity in the buildings. They're working very hard to do that. It's very hard laboring inside the radiation protection suits and respirators, but they're doing that, and they're making progress on getting better control inside the plant.
They're making headway.
Yeah, you're right. Anyone could have said exactly that. Anyone.
What he's basically saying is it's really, really hard, but they're doing the best they can.
Yeah, there's a bunch of guys working on it.
Yeah, they're looking into it. Nothing's really been fixed yet, but, you know, they're trying.
Portland Mayor Sam Adams is on a week-long trip to Germany with the Portland Business Alliance. His office says Adams is scheduled to visit the headquarters of two of the city's businesses, Adidas Sportswear and Daimler Trucks. He's also looking to recruit new German investment in Portland, particularly in the solar power industry. Adams is also meeting with government officials.
What sort of, I mean, apart from... Are we looking to get an Adidas plant or something built here? Because
well,
I know
already,
somebody who's not going to be very happy about that.
Well, we already have Adidas headquarters based here.
Is that true?
Yes.
Where's that at?
It's on that road that goes down.
Oh God, you're doing that thing.
Well,
you know where the old McCluskey fruit stand was?
It's in the vicinity. It's right where you turn off to go to Swan Island. It actually used to be a Kaiser Permanente hospital facility on both sides of whatever that road is.
Let me stop you.
They bought the hospital. And
let me stop you with the phrase, you know where you used to turn to go out to Swan Island. I don't know.
Haven't you ever had to go to Swan Island to get like a FedEx package or something like that?
Maybe. Doesn't mean I remember where it is.
Well, if you're driving down this road.
I don't even know what state that is.
It's over by there.
Is it in Oregon?
Yes.
Well, don't look at me like...
It's in North Portland.
Okay, you were at this point are not allowed to look at me and narrow your eyes in mock surprise as though you were stunned that I don't know where something is. I have no idea. Oh. When you said Swan Island, I thought you were talking about that convenience store that's on Barber.
I figured everybody knows where Swan Island is because that's the damn place you have to drive to when UPS won't leave your package.
I think I have been there, but here's the thing about it, though. I remember looking at the thing that was on my front door and going, God damn it. And I remember being at the counter and the woman going, here's your package. And I said, hurrah. I don't remember anything. The drive betwixt the two is just this vast nether region of just things that I don't remember. Anyway, so the Adidas plant is here.
It's not a plant per se. I think it's designers and developers and officers and things like that. I don't think they actually manufacture everything. That's all in like, you know, Indonesia and China and Mexico and stuff.
Maybe if we had more children.
We have little brown people to do those things. We don't do that here.
We should just create a factory that makes little brown people. It seems like then that's sort of a perpetual motion machine of American industry.
I think those are a natural resource that just take care of themselves.
That factory's headquartered in my neighborhood. This is the sort of sparkling wit we're going to be bringing to the Bob Miller Show, by the way, on KPAM. That's Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of next week, which, by the way...
Leading into Lars Larson or something, who I'm sure will be delighted to follow us.
It's a different station, but I'm sure they won't mind you mentioning his name many times.
Lars is not... No, they have Hannity, don't they? No, they don't have Hannity. They have a couple of right-wing people.
That's exactly how you should describe the station, if anybody asks you. And on Monday, you should be sure to say, isn't Lars or Hannity or one of those guys? Is it going to be on here?
I looked up their station, and one of those guys was on there. I swear.
It's the KPAM white men.
Yes.
A little inside joke for the Rick Emerson listeners. In further news, we'll talk more about this next hour at rickemersonshow.com. But I guess today's big headline is that thing I said about them wanting us to fill in for Bob Miller. It's apparently not a joke. They're serious about it.
That's
so, you know, everybody can just roll that around
kind
inside
of
their head. Well, that's one way to describe it. So that's coming up next week.
They have a guy on their... Oh, Michael Savage is on there. They have a guy on their station named Hugh Hewitt, which I kind of like because never mind. Because it repeats. Hugh Hewitt.
Anyway, so that's coming up next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Filling for Bob Miller, will probably then opt to never, ever, ever. He probably won't even go home at the end of his shift from now on. He'll just he'll just throw down some sort of a pup tent and sleep in the studio to keep us away from the microphone.
You got who? You got who to fill in for me? What the? He'll say.
You are listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson radio program at rickemersonshow.com. That is rickemersonshow.com. Today, Mr. Big Jim Willie going to be in the studio with another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101. Today, talking about the life, work, legacy, career of Mr. Stephen Wright. Also, speaking of comedy and all things chuckle-inducing, Paul and Storm are going to be in the studio as well. And I think not just speaking and bantering in their patented witty fashion, but I believe performing a tune.
Ooh.
Or two for us.
Nice.
So that's Paul and Storm are going to be at the Aladdin tonight. They're going to be performing at the Aladdin tonight. If you've never seen them, you really ought to check them out. It's a fantastic show, and they're going to be on the Rick Emerson Show next hour at rickemersonshow.com. Here is Don Taylor.
Longview police say that two men suspected of stealing thousands of dollars worth of gas were caught on surveillance video. Officers say Roger Wilson and Paul Ortigan pumped 612 gallons of gas into a tank in the bed of their pickup truck over the course of three visits last week. Police believe the suspects may have intended to resell the gas because the tank in the back of their truck could measure out gas by the gallon. The police report says a station employee called authorities Friday to say he watched live security camera footage of two men stealing gas from a station owned by Wilcox and Flegal Oil Company. Wilcox and Flegal.
Okay. Is this story being given to us in some sort of charming British claymation?
Wilson and Flegal.
Wilcox and Flegal. It sounds like some sort of. Like a Brixton residing Statler and Waldorf. You know, like two old guys that don't really get along but have a deep and abiding love for each other under the surface, like the Sunshine Boys.
See, in my head, I see a cartoon beaver and a floppy eared dog.
Is there a
it's
theme
Wilcox
song?
Wilcox and Flegal. Yeah.
They teach us lessons about the enduring love of Jesus.
When police reviewed the security camera footage, they say they saw Wilson opening a secured door on a pump and then hooking up two gas pump hoses to the tank of the truck bed.
Wilson!
A fellow who does maintenance for the station said they had really good knowledge of these dispensers and were able to trick them into not showing the sale. We think they were technicians before, or were taught by one.
Or something.
Or somebody showed them how to use it.
Yeah.
Or something. The same truck was caught on camera Thursday, and 148 gallons of gas were taken at that time.
Awesome.
Other invoices show 364 gallons taken on Friday and another 100 gallons later in the day. An employee said that almost all the gas they stole was Supreme, which set the station back almost $3,000.
You know, here's the... never mind. I don't even care. I was going to make some observation, but you know, the thing about the price of gas... I'll do that again. Save that wit for Monday morning.
I turned into that person, though, yesterday. I went to the gas station, and I almost, like, got on Twitter, but I didn't want to be that Twitter person going, I can't believe I just paid $3.67 a gallon for gas. Yeah, and then I went, I'm not going to be that person.
No.
But, a Portland radio journalist died Wednesday evening after a head-on crash between her 2007 Mazda CX-7 and a semi-truck. Heidi Tauber, 52, who worked for Oregon Public Broadcasting, was southbound in the northbound lanes of Highway 30. The collision was in the left lane of the correct direction, close to the median. Tauber Esping, what was her married name, likely died on impact. The driver of the semi was not hurt. His passenger went to the hospital with non-life-threatening injuries.
Is there any explanation? Here's how I learned about this. So I was at home yesterday, and Cheryl sent me a message, and Cheryl said, "Did you hear about Heidi Tauber?" And I said, it's always bad news when somebody says,
"Yeah,
did you hear about?" Because it's either went to prison, won the lottery, you know, or has died. But the thing is, it's never won the lottery. It's like when your phone rings at 3:30 a.m., you know, and you look at the phone and you go, and it's somebody to whom you're related, and you go, that's not good news. So, and I said, no, what happened? She said, she was killed in a car accident, which I mean, was just, you know, not that there was a time at which I would have been expecting that, but I really was not. I mean, if you would ask me to list the thousand things that Cheryl was going to say, that would not have been on the list anywhere. Is there any indication as to how she came to be going the wrong way? I mean, that takes some doing, I would think. There's a medium, but there can't be a medium because then that would have just stopped it. I'm trying to get a sense on where exactly she was when it took place.
Well, it was the Highway 30 exit from 405.
So is that like, if you're going around on the like Vaughan or something, like you're going to be heading in the northwest?
Yeah.
So she was headed like from downtown or wherever, like from here to like, if you're going to like Northwest 23rd or something.
Something like that. Yeah, I'm having trouble picturing it as well. But yeah, and she was going the wrong way.
I don't even know how that's possible. Unless she was coming from Northwest, headed back into town. Because then there's a thing where you're supposed to bank around, and we're doing that Portland thing, but you're supposed to bank around to the right, and I guess theoretically you could bank to the left, and it is oncoming traffic, but you don't necessarily know that if you're not paying absolutely close attention. I'm just sort of guessing, and I think that requires her to have been in Northwest and to have been heading back downtown or toward downtown. There's nothing really much I can say about it beyond what I said. I put a little thing about it on Facebook yesterday because I hadn't heard. Cheryl's the one who sort of broke the news to me, and it's not like Heidi Tauber and I were like lifelong friends or anything, but we definitely, you know, but we knew each other, and she may have been the first person to fill in for Tim Riley after he got laid off, because we did that because there was an Oregonian article about it, and there's a photo of her in the studio with us. I think she may have actually been the first laid off person who filled in for Tim, and then she and I sort of emailed, you know, and talked to each other off and on after that. But I, you know, I hadn't seen her in a while, but it was there was an instant, and you can tell too. Facebook is interesting in that Facebook is an interesting barometer of these things. Because there's that little that thing on Facebook where in the lower left-hand corner or whatever, you get the little pop-up balloon that tells you when someone has just commented or thumbs up or said, you know, whatever. And it was like I posted something about, you know, sad news, you know, about Heidi Tauber, you know, she'll be missed, and I put up the link. And it's like, I think I pressed the button. It was like 5 seconds hadn't gone by. And I just immediately, I mean, comments started coming in because she was really well-established and well-known in Portland. Yeah. I've been working at Kink lately. That's, I think, the last place she'd been working. And, you know, before that, obviously, she was at KPOJ for a long time. And anyway, so there
you go. Yeah, I never met her, but it's one of the things that you see a headline like, you know, someone was, you know, a radio announcer or something. And 9 times out of 10, it's like somebody obscure and you've never heard of them or something. And it's always shocking when it's someone that's really established and that you've, you know, spent years like following and listening to their work.
Yeah, so. It was. And a lot of people have asked me the same question about how it is that the accident came to happen. And I guess if more news comes out, we'll have it. But for now, that is kind of all we know. You were listening to Lee. And by the way, can I just... Look, I don't mean to make light of the situation, but can we just find some other button that isn't likes this, you know, for like, I don't know, when you're posting the news of someone's death. So people are like, you know, so you get this whole like, Melissa Booker likes this. Oh, crap. And there's no way to take it back either.
Yeah.
Once you thumbs up the fact, you know, not thumbs up the fact, but you know what I mean? It's like I post a thing about Heidi Tauber being dead and somebody's made it like, I'll miss her too. But immediately it's the, you know, and then it shows up as a status update. It's like, so-and-so likes this. And everybody kind of goes... Oh, I know what you meant, but...
Yeah. There needs to be just sort of the shares, you know, or just appreciates this.
There needs to be a sad panda button.
Yeah.
You know, Melissa... I keep picking Melissa Booker for some reason. One of our longtime
listeners. Melissa Booker is a sad panda.
There's... Okay, seriously, somebody needs to work on that plug-in right now. That should be the enduring legacy of Heidi Tauber, the institution of the sad panda button on Facebook. That's how she'd want it.
Failing a pact with the devil... Plastic surgery is the best way for modern dictators to keep looking youthful, says this writer here. Italian Premier Silvio Berlusconi had some work done. Russian leader Vladimir Putin is rumored to as well. And in 1995, Muammar Gaddafi went under the knife. The Associated Press tracked down Gaddafi's surgeon, a Brazilian doctor who says he met the leader in 1994 after delivering a talk on cosmetic breast surgery in Tripoli. A government official... He said, came up to me and said he wanted to meet someone who Libyans love very much. Because of my specialty, I thought he was going to introduce me to his wife. Instead, he met Gaddafi. The following January, a team of doctors performed an early morning facial operation and hair transplant on the Libyan leader in his bunker.
It wasn't like they took him from a C to a D and made him more supple.
No.
Okay.
It was a butt lift.
Yeah.
He needed a butt lift. He actually said no to a facelift on the grounds that he thought it would be too noticeable. Unlike, you know, just suddenly having more hair.
Well, I mean, I think if you're, don't knock suddenly having more hair. I think if you're going to spend a lot of time.
You weren't trying to, like, get away with something.
Also, I'm not a dictator.
Yeah.
Not yet. But I think also that's the thing where if you spend a lot of time establishing your brand, you know, which is your glowering face peering down from billboards and electronic displays, staring at the people and filling them with fear. And suddenly, if you just come in the next day and you got dimples or something, you're not really going to be able to strike, you know, a lot of terror into the hearts of your subjects.
Yeah, that's true. Wow, he's looking so good. Maybe we should not fear him so much. He seems happier. The surgeons said that hamburgers were brought in for everyone, and surgery was interrupted for several minutes while they ate. Surgeons warned Gaddafi he would need a follow-up procedure 5 years later, but his surgeon said that no more operations were scheduled. And then as far as, like, why no one has heard about this before, he said, Gaddafi is not looking very good these days. To let potential patients know I operated on him would be counterproductive.
Well, and also I would imagine if you're the doctor, you just decline interviews about that. That's the thing where if the press comes to you and goes, so, tell us about operating on our glorious leader. You just go, no, I better not. I think I'll just stay inside. That's got to be a high-stress day at the office. It's not like being a surgeon is really just a cakewalk most of the time in terms of your agita level, but I would imagine if you're in charge of operating a Muammar Gaddafi, that's a day where you drink heavily at the end.
It's like, you know, you're a guy who, you know, you're the surgeon who has to, like, take a bullet out of the president or something. It's like, you know, that's about as stressful as it possibly gets. One good way to lose your job if you're in politics would be, for example, to send an email to a political official suggesting he stage a fake assassination and then blame it on the opposition. Or maybe not lose your job because, depending on the official, they might think it's a good idea. An Indiana deputy prosecutor is out of work as of yesterday for doing exactly that. During the height of the Wisconsin labor protests, Carlos Lamb emailed Governor Scott Walker's office recommending he carry out what's called a false flag operation, which means a fake attack, and peg it on labor unions. He wrote in his email, "If you could employ an associate who pretends to be sympathetic to the union's cause to physically attack you or even use a firearm against you, you could discredit the public unions." Lamb initially denied sending the February 19th email, which somehow made it into the press. He blamed it on identity theft.
Whatever it is, happened to scrawling things in a Post-it note. Or, you know, I don't know, just telling a guy in person.
Yeah.
Going, hey, here's what you're doing. It's like every time there's some sort of document dump that happens at Philip Morris, and they have some plan to inject nicotine into babies, you know, or whatever. They have some fetal patch that they're going to start marketing. And then they go, well, we don't know. And then a guy just brings out, like, some document in triplicate that was, like, in the guy's desk at the... I mean, they never heard of a match? A shredder? It just doesn't... It's very confusing.
So the email was released as part of an open record settlement the Walker administration struck with the local media and the Associated Press. And so on Thursday, the ex-prosecutor who sent that email tendered his resignation.
Okay. So the theory was that they would just have a guy come in and just give him a good pistol whipping.
Yeah,
or shooting.
I'm going to kill you. No!
Because of unions.
Because of unions.
And yeah, then he's right on the... So that presumes that you would... I mean... Leaving aside the whole issue of how it's probably impolitic, no pun intended, to do this, you know, and illegal and fraudulent to do this, that presumes you're going to find a guy who's willing to come in and shoot you. I mean, like, and by definition, it has to be on camera, right? Everybody has to see it because you got to be able to say, like, I am a union supporter. It's the governor. Wham. And then just go with it. And then also, so you got to be captured and filmed. And then to do what I would imagine would be a long prison stretch.
Yeah.
And so you got to find a guy that either doesn't mind going to prison, which by definition is a guy you're not going to trust, or a guy who doesn't want to go to prison, which then requires, I would imagine, perhaps skillions of dollars. You know, that's a or the implanting of some sort of you know, some sort of cerebral chip of some kind, which seems beyond the ken of most people.
Or basic, you know, you basically just talk this sap into doing it and say you'll give him a whole bunch of money because
the banks.
If he's brandishing a firearm, odds are good he'll just get taken out by security anyway.
Yeah, but see if they don't, then he's got to follow it all the way to the end, right?
Yeah, exactly.
It's like being on stage and the next, you know, the other guy forgets his line. And then you just have to bluff and go, so I guess I'll make some tea. Except it's not saying that so much as it is shooting the guy.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you just sit there and if you don't play out the threat all the way to the end, then you're just sort of standing around with a gun waiting to be pulped.
Yeah, imagine that you leapt up with the gun and you're like, aha! And then they, like, don't wrestle you to the ground right away.
What do I do now?
So, there, guy. And yeah, there's not much you can do.
You're listening to Legion of News here at Cascadia.fm. Thank you for joining us. Coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio program at rickemersonshow.com. Coming up this hour, we have your entertainment news that is headed your way shortly, as well as what else, Don Taylor?
This afternoon?
No. I was trying to hand it off to science there.
Oh, I was going to say we have science.
Yeah, excellent. Yeah. There's your Science on the March, brought to you by Squires Electric. Find out more about them by going to squireselectric.com or calling 503-252-1609. 503-252-1609. They are licensed, bonded, and insured electrical installers, contractors, and supervisors. And they're just good people. So if you have a business, if you have a home, if you have a home business or a business home, or anything like that. But if you're going to be expanding, if you're going to be upgrading, if you're going to be either modifying your home to actually, you know, to be a place where you do business, if you have a broadband or Ethernet issues, or you want to build a secret passage, let's say, or a series of catacomb-like caverns underneath your home into which you can stash your political enemies for time and all eternity. I mean, that stuff doesn't just build itself. I mean, you know, you got to find good help. And even if you find good help, you know, it's so difficult to just get things done on time and under budget these days. So you want to call Squires Electric and have them take care of building your underground lair. That is 503-252-1609, 503-252-1609, or you can go to squireselectric.com. They have been in Portland for going on 13 years. And Joe Squires, of course, was from here and then spent time, I don't know, and then just walking around submarine, striding purposefully and carrying a sidearm. And he did, what did he say? He said that I was talking about the submarine when he was on the show. The Rick Emerson show, he was talking about the blueback and how that's much smaller, which is, of course, the way that I imagine all submarines being, because they all seem like they're sort of
cramped little things, yeah.
I think it's because my dad loved military, you know, war movies, and so we would watch, like, Grey Lady Down or something, like, 100 times a year, and so I'd picture them being small and cramped, and he said it was very much like The Hunt for Red October, where it was like, what you said, the lower floor was like, it was 26 feet high or something from floor to ceiling, and that was just one level of it, and it was like a three-story building, basically, that traveled underwater. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, really... So whatever jazz you got going on with your hair dryer, it's not like it's going to be all that hard to fix. Let's just be honest. So it's 503-252-1609 or SquiresElectric.com. Proud sponsors of Science on the March.
Dinosaur or mudstain?
Mudstain.
Well, probably, yes.
I don't even know what we're talking about.
An ancient cave drawing high on a rock formation in southeastern Utah has stirred a skirmish of sorts between creationists who believe it's proof that humans and dinosaurs lived together, and scientists who say that that's nonsense. A new research paper on the subject probably won't change too many minds, but it's giving food for thought to those who wonder what the fuss is all about. The petroglyph at the Kachina Bridge Formation in Natural Bridges National Monument has drawn curious visitors for years. By many accounts, it appears to be a hand-drawn plant-eating dinosaur, like the happy green Diplodocus that was the old Sinclair Oil logo. Phil Center, a biology professor at Fayetteville State University, hiked the region with his fiancée 2 summers ago and said, "We got there and I couldn't believe it. It looked just like a sauropod." Petroglyphs are, of course, common throughout parts of Colorado, Utah, New Mexico, drawn several thousand years ago by Native Americans. The drawings represent deer and many other animals, but this was one of a few that appeared to depict prehistoric animals. Center found the petroglyph had been adopted by creationist groups as proof that the human artist coexisted with dinosaurs.
Let me understand this. So does that mean that if I draw a picture of me standing with Andy Warhol, that I am Jean Basquiat? Or that I was, you know, like, so I guess what I'm saying is, yeah, like, let's assume, what if it's not a mudstain? Like, just because it's a picture of a guy and a dinosaur, like, so what?
Yeah.
Like, I saw a picture of Shia LaBeouf standing next to a robot. Doesn't really mean that it's a slice out of natural history or anything. Like, well, why does it have to be one or the other? Why can't it just be a picture of, you know, of a guy with a dinosaur that, you know, doesn't necessarily depict reality as it unfolded?
Mm. Sure, although, really, though...
Or is it just a stain on a wall?
Pretty much it is. It's most likely two drawings of two different kinds of animals and then, like, some kind of a stain in the middle that's kind of connecting the two of them. And it's sort of like the Virgin Mary on your toast or looking at clouds or something. It just kind of ends up being roughly the outline of a dinosaur.
It's interesting how when we talk about people from some earlier time or in a different region, we somehow don't ever give... We make them, like, the most literalistic people on Earth. We never give anybody credit for drawing anything that might not have actually existed.
Yeah, like, they had no imagination.
No,
back
at
then.
No point could a guy just go like, "Well, I don't know, but what if it looked like this instead?" Or here's a thing that I had in my dream last night. Or, like, you know what would be really awesome is if there was a big thing I could ride around on. What do you mean, Zeke? Well, like this. And then he draws it on it. And then here's me riding it. Wouldn't that be great? Yes, but we don't have anything like that. We're cavemen, and there are no dinosaurs. I know, but I'm just saying. Well, okay. And then they have espresso.
Why do your cavemen talk like hillbillies and are named Zeke?
Because it amuses me. but we never say that. We always just assume that there's a picture of something. It had to be a thing that existed.
Yeah.
So, which I guess indicates that there were at one point like 7-mile-high monkeys in Peru, which is true. Here's Don Taylor.
All right. The detection of high levels of radioactivity in certain Japanese foods and the nation's subsequent clampdown on their sales signals the food safety situation is more serious than originally thought, according to the World Health Organization. Peter Cordingley, the Manila-based spokesman for the WHO's regional office for the Western Pacific, said his organization believes people in Japan have to be cautious about what they eat and drink. Besides causing devastation throughout northeast Japan, the 9.0 magnitude earthquake and subsequent tsunami on March 11th seriously damaged several reactors, including leading to the release of an unspecified amount of radioactive material.
When he says be careful about what you eat and drink, how are they supposed to do that exactly? Like, just to whip out the Geiger counter that everybody carries around on their keychain?
Well, I think there are some things that are considered more dangerous than others. Like, they pulled the sale of raw milk like right away, because they actually did detect levels of radioactive iodine in them.
Doesn't it just sort of seem like radiation? I mean, radiation's a little bit like body odor. You know, you put that in a room, it doesn't really discriminate. It just kind of floats everywhere.
Well, yeah, but it's also that some food items are coming from areas that are, you know, more likely to have radiation than other. Like they had to stop shipping a whole bunch of spinach because it came from this one region that is actually fairly close to the reactor.
So it's like if somebody tried to sell me Love Canal beef, I might Well, I got this from the Three Mile Island Cheese Factory. Do you want some? And you say, no, I don't think so. I think
Chernobyl jerky.
I'll pass.
Although,
really, let's be honest. At this point, I would, as much as I don't typically embrace this philosophy, I think I'd be walking a sort of live for today kind of path if I lived in Japan at the moment. Maybe re-examine that in a few weeks, but I think that I might be opting for immediate pleasures as opposed to postponing things.
You'd kind of cancel those train tickets for later in the year.
Yeah, and maybe just, you know, maybe confine your reading to pamphlets. Here's Don Taylor.
Surprise scientists have discovered the remains of a saber-toothed vegetarian. The leaf-crunching animal, about the size of a large dog, lived 260 million years ago in what is now Brazil. This was reported in Friday's edition of the journal Science. Its upper canine teeth were nearly 5 inches long. Such large teeth are more often the mark of a meat-eating animal used to capture and kill prey. The enormous canines on this animal were likely used to fight each other or protect against predators. For example, they might have fought for territory, resources, or females like the modern musk deer, which also have a pair of large tusk-like teeth. These situations are extremely important for the survival of an individual and the success of a species, said the researcher. Discovering animals like this shows us how nature is extremely creative in providing situations for several life tasks.
How do they know that it was a plant-eating creature?
I think they can tell by the composition of the minerals and stuff in its bones. They can test the remaining bones and see what kind of foods it had been ingesting.
So it just had the large saber teeth just to be awesome?
Yeah.
Just for extra lethality and elan.
Yeah, he looked kind of like a land walrus with big sharp teeth.
Okay, that's a ridiculous looking animal.
Yeah,
I was going to be really impressed.
But he was the size of a dog.
It just looks like a turtle that somehow got. That looks like a turtle that somehow just wasn't able to gnaw on the bars of its cage sufficiently, and it just everything just grew out of control. That's ridiculous.
Here's a color rendering of.
Oh my God, that's absurd.
Roaring.
It's absurd.
It's like a turtle dog with sharp tusks.
And it's terrifying and adorable all at once. That's a combination you don't see that often.
No.
A thing that fills you with fear, but it's tempting to go, oh, it's a carrot. Please don't disembowel me. Who wants a carrot?
Yeah, and it's not going to eat you because it eats vegetables.
Right.
So you can still, you have to pet it very carefully, though. That's all the science.
Okay, there's your Science on the March brought to you by Squires Electric. It's squireselectric.com or 503-252-1609. Don't forget, next hour, the Rick Emerson Radio Program will have Mr. Big Jim Willig in the studio with us for another installment of Humor Me Comedy 101 today, talking about the life and career of Mr. Stephen Wright. Also, Paul and Storm are going to be gracing us with their presence and a little performing, and they're going to be at the Aladdin tonight, so et cetera. And they're going to be there. Did you see the whole like list of the people who are playing? Because they're doing this thing. It's like the Nerds and Music Tour.
Yeah.
And so it's Paul and Storm, and then is several other performers, including... I don't have this in front of me. I'll have to dig it up so I make sure that I say it correctly. But it's this twin sister nerd duo. They're called the Double Clicks, and their page is awesome. It's just a huge. You go to their page and it's just them like strumming a lute with just like a giant D20 in the middle of, and then nothing else. And then that's and that's it. And it and then it just says something like Sisters and Nerds.
They friended me on Twitter yesterday, and I didn't know who they were, and I went and I looked, and I was like, ooh,
yeah,
they're kind of awesome.
Here's Don Taylor.
The family of a man charged with leaving an explosive outside a Detroit federal building says he's unemployed and has a history of mental illness. The family says Gary Mikulich was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia 18 years ago, but often fails to take medication. The statement was released to news media in the Upper Peninsula.
If you're a paranoid schizophrenic and some guy says, you need to take these pills. It seems like that's sort of a self-defeating proposition. Yeah. That's like a Lewis Carroll poem or something.
Mikulich, 42, left a metal box containing electrical components outside the McNamara Federal Building on February 26th. The case has embarrassed the government because the explosive inside a metal cash box that was in a tool bag sat inside the building that houses the FBI, IRS, Immigration Court, and other agencies for 20 days before anyone looked at it or did anything about it. According to an affidavit filed in court, the man, Mikulich, complained to the police about the FBI and a so-called card system more than a dozen times since January. The complaints claim that the card system has led to the murder of thousands of people and has attacked him. A February 11th fax read, "This card system is going berserk for some reason. They are making threats of hitting the local police, sheriff's office, and state police. They are threatening to murder me, too." The FBI says they have no idea what he means by a card system. Of course, he also refers to himself as President Mikulich, the nominated president of the United States of America.
Can I just tell you this? My wife, who deals with crazy folk, apparently there are any number. It's a, believing oneself to be the president, sometimes the king, but usually the president. I guess that's very, very common. Like half the guys who come in who are just like, you know, the guys who are just plain nuts, you know, not a guy who's just like dealing, you know, like, you know, some guys are like, you know, they're just a, you know, substance abuse, or they, or they have a, some sort of depression or whatever. But the guys who are just like full on screaming crazy, like half of them at one point or another believe that they're the president. And then occasionally you'll get like on the ward, there'll be like three or four guys who all simultaneously believe themselves to be the president of the United States. And so then there's, I get the sense that there must be just this whole like really tense like situation in the lunchroom, you know, like in the, like in the sort of in the day room when they're just sitting there reading Field and Stream magazines and staring at each other hatefully and just wondering, you know,
Not really the president. He's crazy.
And just, you know, yeah, when do they have to consider the nuclear option to, you know, to just settle things once and for all? So I so desperately, I kept telling...
Get these guys like Settlers of Catan or Risk or something to play against each other.
I thought you were going to say that we should bring them into the studio
well,
someday.
That too.
Can I just tell you this? Now, are you just saying that or did I tell you this? She got them all playing Risk.
No, you didn't tell me this.
Yeah, because my wife had never played Risk, but she is a big fan of Settlers of Catan, and I was like, oh, you know, and when she first started playing Settlers of Catan, I said, that's kind of like Risk. And she said, what's Risk? And I said, oh, my God. And so then for Christmas, I got her this, like, super Risk that they sell now, where it's the original, you know, the version, the sort of classic version we played growing up. And then it's got all these other sort of variations, like, but it's still a board game. And so she immediately was, like, the full-on Risk convert. But she took it to the, you know, she took it to work with her because the thing about Risk, it also just goes on, like, forever. I mean, the games never end.
Yeah.
And so if you need, if there's some guy who's, like, you know, threatens to get a little stabby every now and again, you just want to keep him occupied, you know, you just give him Risk, and as long as things don't escalate like too quickly or become, as long as the game doesn't become too heated, that's a way to keep that guy busy for like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 hours. But it had never occurred to me that she should actually be getting like all the guys who simultaneously believe themselves to be president and then putting them behind a Risk board.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know that in their heads, I'm just guessing, but you know that in their heads, it's going to be like that thing in every military movie where they're standing over the big glass table with little figures on it, and the guy's got the little, the little billiards bridge that he's shoving soldiers back and forth with. Well, we're on the Western Front, sir. That's awesome. All right. I'm totally taking care of that.
Well, this fella with his explosive device, which was not, they say, a bomb per se. Finally, after sitting there for almost 3 weeks, somebody decided to X-ray it. And they went, ooh, electrical components. And they took it to the Detroit Bomb Squad and they blew it up. The exploded materials included pieces of PVC pipe, a timer, and black electrical tape, along with a handwritten note that read, 1, turn switch. 2, plug in.
Awesome.
So,
excellent. Well, there's a certain clarity of thought there, certain simplicity of purpose. Here is Don Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Friday, March 25th, 2011.
Elizabeth Taylor was laid to rest at Forest Lawn Cemetery in Glendale, California on Thursday, and not without drama, the actress was late to her own funeral. She planned it that way. The private service was scheduled to begin at 2 p.m. yesterday, but Taylor's limo arrived 15 minutes late per her instructions.
That's awesome.
That she wanted to be late even for her own funeral.
Well done.
The funeral was attended by Taylor's family and actor Colin Farrell, who read Gerard Manley Hopkins' poem, The Leaden Echo and the Golden Echo.
Okay.
Taylor was buried near Michael Jackson in the Great Mausoleum. According to CBS News, all things Liz have become hot commodities since the actress's death on Wednesday. 7 of her movies have become top 100 bestsellers on Amazon, and the number of Elizabeth Taylor-branded items sold on eBay has gone up by 1,600% since last week. A public service for Taylor will be scheduled in New York, and in honor of a memory, Broadway theaters will dim their marquees at 8 o'clock tonight for 1 minute. Design star judge Vern Yip and his partner welcomed daughter Vera Lillian Beatrix into the world on March 12th.
I don't understand any of those words.
I don't know who they are either.
Is design star?
I just wanted to say design star judge Vern Yip.
Is that all one word?
Well, he's
Judge Vern Yip.
Apparently, Design Star is a show,
okay.
A reality show, I'm right. Assuming. It's
like a Project Runway sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, it's a cheap ripoff of
Vern Yip.
And then one of the judges is named Vern Yip.
Does he spend the whole show floating through walls on Sesame Street and making fantastic bedazzled dresses?
Yes.
Okay.
Exactly. Boardwalk.
Yip.
What?
Yip.
Oh. Boardwalk Empire Michael Shannon is up for the role of the villain in Superman Man of Steel. Henry Cavill is playing Superman in the feature, which co-stars Diane Lane and Kevin Costner as Ma and Pa Kent.
Wait, which guy is this?
This is Michael Shannon, you know, the creepy...
The creepy self-flagellating guy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know what I was thinking about the other day? Because did Scorsese, does he produce that show?
Yeah.
He directed the first, but he also is the producer.
Right.
You know, I was watching Goodfellas the other day, and... You know what I never realized is how much that guy looks like some weird, he looks like Ray Liotta's ugly brother. You know,
yeah.
Not ugly, but you know what I mean? Like, Ray Liotta's a classically attractive man, and that guy's sort of attractive in a sort of intense, creepy way, but he looks a lot like Ray Liotta. And I wonder if that's by design, or, you know, in other words, if that's a certain type or look, or if it was, in fact, a thing that they maybe thought about Ray Liotta for. Because it seems too close to be a coincidence.
Yeah, he's another one of those actors that he is probably... A very nice, very lovely, very intelligent man. And I just always think how odd it must be and how awesome your self-esteem must be to have a career where every time anyone describes you, they just say you're creepy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's got to be good at something.
Yeah. Donald Sutherland is denying a report from former Paramount executive Peter Bart regarding the infamous rumor that he and Julie Christie actually had sex during their love scene in Nick Rogue's Don't Look Now. Bart made the claims in his upcoming book, Infamous Players, A Tale of Movies, The Mob, and Sex. Sutherland said, "It's not true. None of it. Not the sex. Not him witnessing it. From beginning to end, there were four people in the room. Nick Rogue, Tony Richmond, the cinematographer, Julie Christie, and me. No one else." So this is one of those things that people have... It's one of these urban legend kind of... rumored things that's been going on for 40 years.
Well, I think it's an urban legend in the sense that we don't know that it's true, but I would say I just sort of take it as an article of faith that's true about somebody somewhere in some prominent love scene in some widely seen film.
Hmm.
I mean, the law of averages indicates that, like, you know, how could it not
be? It's happened at least
once. Yeah, I mean, well, seriously, I mean, look, I mean, if you assume. And if you take it as read that, let's say the guy can perform under what might be sort of strange and intense, circumstances, like nine guys in the room and the craft services woman, like, you know, piling bagels on a plate or something. If you sort of assume that that's not an issue, you got to are willing to accept the proposition that people sometimes have illicit relations that they shouldn't, and that sometimes the idea of having an illicit relation, in fact, makes it more appealing. And if you accept the proposition that there are people who are exhibitionistic by nature, actors, if you're thinking like, well, hey, here's our chance to hump. Who's going to know? And then it'll be our little secret.
Well, in this particular case, it was fueled by the fact that it was the 70s. People were a lot looser in the 70s. Sutherland and Julie Christie were having a relationship at the time, and it's not a particularly artsy scene, just basically looks like people humping.
I'm just saying, like, if you were into it and the chick was into it and you knew you could get away with it, like, why wouldn't you? I would totally do that. I'm telling you right now.
Comedy Central has renewed Futurama for two more seasons.
Yeah.
The show will air through 2013. Each new season was given a 13-episode order from Comedy Central. The series features the voice cast of Katie Sagal, Billy West, and John DiMaggio.
That is fantastic.
And finally, Helen Mirren. You know who I mean. Helen Mirren. Dear God.
That's her Asian doppel.
Helen Mirren. Oscar-winning actress Helen Mirren.
Helen Mirren, I have all films. My biggest fan.
Will have her handprints and footprints set in cement Monday at Grauman's Chinese Theater.
You didn't know how that story ended when you started it, did you? Oh, that's great. That's awesome.
Okay. You put hands in right next to Sid Caesar.
Wonderful.
Mirren stars with Russell Brand.
Who?
Helen Mirren.
Uh-huh.
Stars with Russell Brand in the romantic comedy Arthur, a remake of the Dudley Moore film.
Okay.
Which opens April 8th.
Grandma's Chinese Theater, you say?
Yeah. Yes.
That's wonderful. Hey, don't forget, the Rick Emerson Show happens next hour, a little bit after the hour of 1 o'clock. We'll do a musical interlude following this program, and the Rick Emerson Show can be heard at rickemersonshow.com. Don't forget, it's just 32 cents per day if you would like to listen to us. We want to welcome new subscriber Dan. I haven't had a chance to check. I was running. We'll talk more about this next hour, but I was running real late today, so it's, I didn't have a chance to check my email since this morning. But as of this morning, I saw the new listener Dan has joined the Rick Emerson fold. So thank you for
Dan.
Hello, Dan. Thank you for joining us. Don't forget, you can hear the Rick Emerson Show for the low cost of just 32 cents per day. My friends, my chum, mi amigo, mi companion, mi compadre, and your first week is free. And really, let's be honest, that doesn't really matter because it's going to be the best thing you've ever heard in your life.
And you may have time to sign up right now if you want to hear Colin Storm.
That's right.
Later today.
Everybody should flood the subscription gates right now and see if we can drive Cheryl to the point of nervous collapse. So that is coming up next hour, the Rick Emerson Show at rickemersonshow.com. We'll also have Jim Willig in the studio for another installment of Humory, Comedy 101. Hey, I have to ask this. Do we have a penis watch next hour?
Yes, we do.
Awesome. Okay. I've carefully crafted the moment in the show where I say, could I get you to sing the penis song? Which they may not. Who knows?
No, they might.
But I
bet they will, though.
I bet they'll give it the old college try.
Yeah.
So I'm... It really is just going to be the most, it's going to be the most glorious closing of a circle in my head if I can get them to actually be in the studio and sing the penis watch, because they, of course, are half of Da Vinci's Notebook, who are the folks who did that song originally, so it'll be awesome. All right, let's do like two more here and we'll take a break.
Yeah, okay, well, that's all the entertainment news. So.
All right, there you go. When I said take a break, I mean end the show.
Oh, yeah, well, it's a break for us. It's not a break for the fine listeners of Cascadia.fm.
It's a break from the time in their day when they're entertained and amused, Dawn. It's a
by us.
Yeah.
There's other entertainments to be
yeah, about. But I mean, but they're them. We're us. Come on.
The air traffic controller who fell asleep in the tower at Reagan National Airport early Wednesday has been drug tested and suspended by federal authorities, reports the Washington Post. FAA Chief Randy Babbitt said he was personally outraged by the incident, in which two passenger planes were forced to land unaided as the controller sailed away to the land of Nod. Apparently he was napping, it turns out.
Okay.
When the controller awoke, he told the pilot that the silence was caused by a stuck mic.
So that he was, what, so he was asleep?
Was he asleep
in the room, or was he somewhere else?
I believe he was actually asleep in the control tower.
Okay.
Yes.
So he just, he had that, like, button you pressed, you know, the little CB radio button where you, like, breaker, you know, one night, and he just fell asleep, like, on that, or just?
I don't know.
Or was he just, like, back in the cloakroom, you know, just sort of snoring away, and, you know, it came up. It's like the old person I was blaming the stuck gas pedal when they go through the front of a Woolworths.
Well, he admitted to federal officials he had, in fact, fallen asleep during his fourth consecutive night shift. The House Transportation Committee will conduct an investigation into the incident and others like it. Officials did not make public the results of his drug test.
Okay. Let's do one more here and we'll end this thing.
The Hispanic population in the U.S. has topped 50 million, composing one out of every six Americans.
And that's just in that one house. Hey now.
The staggering 43% growth in the Hispanic population over the last decade is due to an increase of U.S. births and, to a lesser extent, immigration. By 2050, Hispanics could make up a third of the U.S. population, according to the Los Angeles Times. A quarter of people under the age of 18 nationwide are Hispanic, while in California, Hispanics make up over half of children. In 2000, 81% of Hispanics lived in nine states, including Arizona, California, and Texas. That percentage has decreased as the population spreads to other parts of the country, causing terror in the hearts of Republicans everywhere.
Like a swarthy, spicy plague, Don. That's what it is.
And if that isn't frightening them enough,
just imagine just you're just in somebody's house, like in Orem, Utah, and you just parting the curtains and creeping very, very carefully towards the window and silently and slowly looking out, and it's just. It's just coming over the hill. The stuff of your nightmare is approaching.
Meanwhile, the proportion of African Americans living in the South, 57%, has reached the highest point in half a century as younger educated blacks leave cities in the Northeast and head south.
So really, this means that the white oppressor is on his way out.
Pretty much, yeah.
Excellent. All right.
That's why they're so scared.
Ah, fantastic. You know how I feel about Whitey, Don.
I know. Down with the man.
All right.
Is our show over yet?
I guess.
Okay.
I'm feeling very strange today. I don't know. It's not bad, not tired, not weird. You know what it is? As I believe Lewis Carroll wrote in Through the Looking Glass, I'm feeling a little peculiar today. I don't know what that's all about. So. All right. Well, let me just look over. There we go. Awesome. This has been another exciting installment of Legion of News. We come to you live each and every weekday from the studios of the Emerson News Network, high above the Milkpacking District in glorious Southeast Portland, Oregon, at the news desk, Dawn Taylor. Advanced technology and magic provided by Mr. Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff Cheryl Kanakoa. As always, we thank you for listening. Don't forget, you can get this program later on the day via iTunes or as a direct MP3 download here at Cascadia.fm or legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show is next at rickemersonshow.com today, featuring Mr. Big Jim Willig and the musical stylings of Paul and Storm. Thank you for joining us. Have a fantastic weekend. We will talk to you Monday at noon.